This Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, which takes place of the previous Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, which is no longer on the internet, is brought to you by the Colony Meadery, the official gluten-free booze made from honey of the process, and the Paul Green Rock Academy, the official music school of the process. On today's Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, we'll talk about the Sixers, Nets, Game 2, and also whether Sixers fans booing motivated the Sixers, and also whether anyone under the age of 19 knows how to do any dance that doesn't come from Fortnite. Without any further ado, here is Run the Jewels.
We are the murderous pair that went to jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then went to hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have power to push, now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Two runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who is a lot closer to 19 years old than I am and would know more about the Fortnite dancing. That is Mike Levin. Big win, buddy. Big
okay.
Win. All right.
All right. Yeah. That's
our first podcast of the playoffs.
That's right. Delete the other one immediately. Yeah. Legitimately, no Sixers fans listen to that podcast anyway, so they didn't hear it. I asked for a 40-point win. We got a 22-point win. Benching the starters with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter counts as a 40-point win to me, so I will count this as a W, the first win of
that was a little bold. All of the starters with 10 minutes left.
Yeah.
I was like, part of me was like, maybe this doesn't end well. This seems like a little
even John
much.
Simmons is playing still? Okay.
Yeah, the whole time? All right.
Did you see that every single player, every active player in the Sixers scored? All 13.
Were there any inactive players that also scored? I think if the game had gone another 5 minutes.
Yeah. Zaire was inactive, which is frustrating for me personally. But I want to start this out with I think the MVP of the game, James Ennis. Welcome the fuck back, James.
Just puts everything.
Has to be. How different does this team look with a even mildly competent wing off the bench? And I think he just looked fine. He didn't take any threes, but we have enough players that can do things. That was not the problem. That was the problem last year. They didn't have enough players that can do things. We have enough players that can do things. We just have too many players that get exploited on the defensive end. And James Ennis being in there, just like he closed off Caris LeVert on a drive early in the first, and it was like, oh, this is much better. They can't just get to the rim every single possession, which was happening in game one. So I give him, I don't know if James Ennis rang the bell, but he'd ring my bell. I don't care. Read into that how you want.
James Ennis can ring my bell anytime.
James Ennis can ring my bell. James Ennis also does have smoker's arms, absolutely. But, I'll take him for the win.
I got there early tonight because it was an 8 o'clock start. And the worst part about an 8 o'clock start, at least on the East Coast, when you also work in the city, is that it's a little too much time in between the end of work and the start of the game, if that makes any sense. Like, 6 o'clock, I'm sort of like ready to go and there's nothing to do. So I'm watching James Ennis warm up and he just looked like the best basketball player I had ever seen. And he was easily sinking three-pointer after three-pointer during shoot around. I was pretty happy to see him.
He just was very competent, honestly. Like a couple offensive rebounds. Like moved his feet defensively, passed the ball, just like did all
Simmons.
We need. That's like all we need. Really, that's all we need. And to have somebody come in there and just do it is, oh, what a delight. What a delight it was.
Really adorable. Yeah. So there are a lot of things here that we can get to. I will say that the crowd again was, if this is a longish playoff run or a good playoff run, the crowds are pretty primed. It's weird when we were doing the pod the other night, I don't think either of us brought up the booing thing at all. It didn't seem weird to me as I was watching it. It was sort of weird that it became a talking point afterwards. But one of the things I sort of thought about was when they're booing that quickly, it just means they're like, everyone is pretty amped up. Yeah. Everyone's pretty riled up. Otherwise, it just gets quiet because I've been a lot of those regular season games. And the crowd tonight was the same way. They were pretty amped up. It's going to be a pretty sick home court if they can keep this going for a couple of rounds.
I also think Sixers will have like a third of the fans in Brooklyn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Especially with this win tonight, I think it makes it even better. Yeah. I'm attending that game with non-Oscar winner Mike Weber and Mike Kaplan. But yeah, I imagine it'll be a lot of Sixers fans in there. So, all right. So I've actually a shit ton of notes. First of all, I think Ben Simmons, I think, set the tone for the game by coming out like basically the opposite of the previous game. Mm-hmm. And we got really aggressive Ben Simmons offensively. And it just, dude, when he just realizes, when he doesn't overthink it and realizes that he is like stronger and faster and bigger than most everyone that's guarding him, and just go for it. He is a much more, dominant sort of player that can keep the other team on their heels. And he did that right from the very start of the game.
Yeah. I mean, intensity up. I'll talk about the loose balls later, but Ben specifically, I think you're right. Set the tone, got to the rim, even missed a couple early because I think he was a little over-amped mm-hmm. for it, but moved the ball, made like that cross court like pass to Tobias in the corner was like electric. Moved around well on D'Angelo defensively. What did D'Angelo do? He kind of like, he was hot from three for a while, so he was 3 of 7 from deep. He was hitting shots. But they just did not get to the rim nearly as much as they did in the first game. And I think it was because Ben and Ennis and even Tobias a little bit were being physical with guys on the perimeter, not just letting them get wherever they want. And Ben got to the rim, got to the line a couple times. I enjoyed the drawing the flagrant one on Kouroukz underneath, and then the smirk. Yeah. You were at the game, right? So you didn't see. Did you see the smirk after? Was pretty.
I
solid.
Didn't see the smirk, but it was a. I who tweeted? Was it Unterberger that tweeted that like Ben Simmons is too smug to like flop properly?
I love it. I love it.
Which is a pretty apt description. I thought and two, and I don't know if you saw this on TV, but the. Him going to the crowd two separate times to get the crowd riled up, especially on a defensive possession, like not even after a play, but like raising his arms. I don't know, like the whole, I like that. Like I appreciated him because my first response when I heard his comment, like his first comments about the booing were like not great. And then he came and he said the right thing the next day. But I like him going right and like, you know, and beating it up a little bit and getting in with the crowd. And even if it was a conscious decision to do it, it worked for me. He was really good. You know?
Why not? Yeah. I mean, look, he's frustrated after a loss. I wouldn't have said it. If he asked me, I would have said, don't say that. But as far as being frustrated after a loss where your team looks like you have no heart or interest being there, that wasn't the worst possible thing to say. Like, it's just a frustrated, like, fuck those guys. I get it. But I'm proud of him for sort of bouncing back and then turning into, like, Benny From here a little bit. and just, like, play to the crowd, go to Iverson, do, like, the Mutombo finger rag, whatever it takes. Like, I don't know, like, quote some The Village lines back to Shyamalan. Whatever you need to, like, to get the crowd back on your side, I'm on board. Absolutely. His second triple-double in the playoffs, obviously triple-doubles or whatever, but like him being up there with Barkley and was it Wilt, the only other Sixers to ever get multiple triple-doubles. Like it's easy to remember. Look, is Ben the player that we eventually is as good of a player as he eventually will become? No, I think he'll add the jumper to his game. I think he'll continue to get smarter and, find ways where he can, use his size and strength and intelligence advantage over other players. But like, it's easy to remember he's still in second year. Like, he's still got a long way to go. And that's also in how he deals with the press, and that's how he deals with his teammates and how he handles adversity, all the stuff. So like, he's a really talented, he's a really good player. I'm really glad he's on our team. I know people want to just like trade him for Jeff Teague or fucking whatever, but like, I'm happy to have Ben Simmons on our team. And I think he absolutely set the tone tonight, and they come out not as popping as if he wasn't setting the tone.
Well, because truly, I really, at this point, you know, I TJ aside, or because he is a process guy, or like, you know, some players I like more than others, whatever, but I still don't believe anybody truly matters but those two, but Ben and Joel, because like, they are going to have to be the two best players on the team that win a championship. So any, you know, wins aside and Eastern Conference Finals aside, like, any step I see by either one of those guys that takes them further to what their peak is and what their ceiling is, because the ceiling for Simmons is like top five player in the league. That's the ceiling for him. And if he can do that, that is a really frightening pair of young stars to have. As good as they are now, they can get there. So any step I see him take toward that, I think is great. You have to feel great about, you know, coming back after that game one, and after the Boston series, if we're just thinking about Celtics and play this way. I thought it was really good. I will say, a part of my warm-up watching as well was watching Ben shoot fadeaway jumpers from the post, mm-hmm. and just shoot standstill jumpers. And like, it just, the jumper and all that, just, Your shooting hand is still on the side of the fucking ball. And I'm sure your brother's a great guy, but like, go to a real shooting coach and let's get this done and just fucking end the league. Because watching you shoot like that hurts, because it should be so much easier for you. It's easier if you put your arm under the ball. It's just put it fucking under the ball like everybody else. Just put it under the ball, buddy. What else?
Can we talk about Tobias for a sec before we get to Embiid?
Yeah. I want to talk about Tobias, because then I want to talk about Brett too. So talk about Tobias.
Yeah, so Tobias looked bad for the first quarter or two and just like, mm-hmm. couldn't get going. Whether it's like Brett's scheme, like not finding him in the right places, or him just feeling uncomfortable where he's supposed to be, whatever. But like, he's just missing a lot of shots, and like shots he usually hits. And over the last month and a half, 2 months, it's been that way. And so you're just waiting for the regression. You're waiting for the regression. Like, please be the guy that you've been for the last however many years. And then I thought what was smart is he got, I think the possession that got him, he got fouled on a three and took three foul shots and then started getting to the line a bunch. And that really warmed him up, I think. And then he started playing. He disappeared for, I think, a quarter or two, and then like came alive and was finding guys off cuts. He was moving a little bit. Like, there was a segment of time when Sixers had the lead, and then they sat Embiid, and Boban came in, and they beat Boban to the rim like three times in a row. Brett calls a timeout, and then whatever happened in that timeout, they come out and they just fucking blow the doors off him. And that was when like there was much more movement on the offensive end. And I think Tobias was a big part of that, and I think also Boban, will get to that too. But like, Tobias just needs to be a really good shooter. Like, he just really needs to be like an excellent, excellent shooter, because JJ's sometimes unplayable because of the defensive end. Jimmy's shot comes and goes, especially the outside shot, which he doesn't love taking anyway. Embiid doesn't love taking them. Simmons obviously won't. So it's like, it's just gotta be Tobias. He's just gotta be money from three, like the whole playoffs, or they're not going to win. Like, it's just the case. As far as playable guys in every situation, Tobias is going to be there. So he's just got to hit. And I was proud of him for like getting, you know, that one three, the first three that he hit, that sort of like eked in over the rim. It was just like, oh, breath of fresh air. Like, you just sigh of relief situation. And I thought he was good on defense. I mean, he can't stay with Dinwiddie. I it sucks that we have to put him there sometimes. I want him to, like, all the Nets moving screen are frustrating me, and I wish that someone would just like take a header and draw a foul on that bullshit, because it's egregious. Not that the Sixers don't do it also, but it's more frustrating because the Nets are hitting their threes. So I wanted him to take a header, but I was impressed with the defensive effort. I was impressed with bouncing back, and hopefully this is a sign of things to come.
So on Tobias, because I was texting with Unterberger about Tobias during the game. And I've mentioned a few times the, and I can never remember the fucking phrase, having guys that all do the same thing, diminishing returns. I mentioned the diminishing returns thing a bunch of times offensively with these guys because their skill sets are different, but their uses on offense are all sort of the same. Like the usage rate that each guy succeeds at is sort of the same, and there's not enough. And the thing about Tobias Harris is, or anybody whose key benefit is that they score, is that they all sort of benefit from rhythm one way or another. And there's a big difference, and I'm sure someone will throw the numbers at me and say that it isn't different, but there's a big difference between being like a focal point on offense and a hit the open three guy on offense. And on the Clippers, you know, Tobias Harris was a focus. They were running a lot of offense through him. And on the Sixers, he ends up being like a tall JJ Redick sometimes in that he's got to hit trailer threes and he's got to hit corner threes and all that kind of stuff. And it must just be a little bit harder for him to, even the difference between 10 shots in a game, 11 shots and 15 shots or 16 shots, you don't really have the chance to get going. You just sort of have to make everyone count a little bit more. And I think it's probably tough for him to do that. And it did, for what it's worth, take Butler a little while to figure out even how he's supposed to do that. So I think Tobias Harris might be a guy who is a little bit better the more usage that he gets, and he's going to have a hard time finding that usage here. But I'm glad that it's a cliche, but the get to the line to watch the ball go through the hoop thing, you know, get some easy shots to feel your way through it, I think is helpful.
For sure.
Know? Just to get three shots at the basket.
I know. I don't disagree with any of that. And I think that's why it's nice that Brett staggers those guys and lets Tobias and Jimmy like have their time when it's like, okay, you're handling the ball. Even sometimes Ben just becomes a screener when he's on the court with those guys. This is part of the, they've played now 12 games together as a starting lineup and they need to figure it out on the fly. And tonight was good. Man, tonight was good. I was not in a good place. I wasn't anywhere near a good place. A lot of
you
people
weren't.
Go ahead.
You didn't have anyone fooled with that.
No, I wasn't trying to pretend like I wasn't.
Yeah.
A couple text messages went unanswered. A couple people I saw today were like, "How you doing?" And I'm like, "I don't even do this." I will say that I wasn't in a place to tweet this after or say this after game one, but I came very close multiple times during game one to tweet how not worried I was. And I typed something out and then I just deleted it so many times. And I'm glad I held that back because bad game. And they never came back from that one. But this one was, 61 points from the bench. If you would have told me that the Sixers bench would have scored 61 points, I would have thought that the starters had died. They died in a starters only meal the night before the game. And now worse, it's just the bench. Shocking stuff. But hey, how about it? 7 points for Furkan Korkmaz in a playoff game. Seven.
I want to talk about the coach for a second. After we talk about, boy, do I have a funny surprise for you from our sponsor, Colony Meadery. It feels like forever since we've talked about the Colony Meadery. Mike, true or false? Mead is wonderful if done right. True or false?
True.
True or false, the Colony Meadery in Allentown has basically perfected mead. True or false?
True.
True. They were living and dying with the game as we were tonight, and then they're going to get back to their day job tomorrow, which is to make mead for the masses. Mead is a gluten-free, cidery, beery, winey kind of alcohol.
It's all of it.
With a little bit of fizz, just enough sweetness that comes in all flavors. So if you are a gluten-free person, you don't have to be stuck with that one cider that they have at every bar. Or if you're just sick of what you're drinking, you got to get some mead. They have a million flavors at the Colony Meadery. Mini mead, my favorite. I rank that number one. Comes from raspberry blossom honey. And number two, I rank T-Tax. because putting lemonade and iced tea and making it alcoholic with honey and no gluten is a win for me. Huge win. You can get it at Wegmans, any Wegmans in Eastern PA, Bella Vista, Beer Love, Iron Abbey, or you can just order it online at colonymeatery.com. Now, Mike, check this out. You can use code Ricky for $5 off, but also for a limited time, if you use the code on colonymeatery.com, Amir's-phone, you will get free shipping for any order over $25. Amir's-phone, Amir's-phone for free shipping over $25.
Way to reclaim it.
Yep. You can go to the Colony Meadery, get a tour or a tasting, or you can order it online or go to any of those places. Colonymeadery.com, code Ricky for $5 off. You must be 21 to drink. Please get buzzed responsibly. So generally a basketball coach, unless you win championship after championship, does not really get credit until... Like, or if you win a championship, and sometimes if you win a championship, you don't even get credit. Like, I don't think anyone credits Ty Lue with anything. So while it's a joke that we've said that Brett Brown, like, is only there for the losses, that's sort of like the job, I think, sometimes. There are the overboard guys, like people go with Stevens, but mostly it's like what happens with Brett. And I think a lot of the reason that people blame Brett is because it is, and I'm not saying that he's perfect or isn't to blame for things, but it's a lot easier to say, well, if we just get rid of him, then everything will be fine. Then sometimes there are bigger issues that you don't even want to deal with, and they're not as easily solved as it's that guy. It's just a very simple thing to say it's that guy. He is in only his second playoffs as a head coach of a basketball team. After the last game, he had only been in his second playoffs and one game. I would say that last season, not this past season, but the season before, I think he should have been seriously considered for Coach of the Year, like at least gotten votes to go from 28 wins to 52 and do what they did. My only point with him is that I think when people blame him for things, they're skipping over the things that come before it. And I just, like, as we've said a million times, I don't know that he is a championship coach, but I certainly don't know that he's not. And while I would take away any power he has as far as personnel goes, like, the reason that it seems like I would come across as a Brett Brown apologist isn't because I'm sure that he's doing it right. It's like I'm just sure that isn't the issue, or that isn't the main issue, or that, you know, that... Everything that I say, whether it's a new roster, so on and so forth, people say they don't want to hear it, but they're all real things. So the truth is that I don't really even know how to judge Brett Brown until I'm sure that it's him. That's part of the problem, I think.
I think you can never isolate that kind of stuff, though, you know?
Yeah.
I think there's just, there's so many things happening on a basketball court at once. I thought that he was outcoached in game one. I thought that his guys weren't ready. I thought that... I'm frustrated by how the team hasn't been willing or hasn't found a way to better defend the pick and roll, and guys got to the rim every time. They did a better job tonight. I think Brooklyn, at least the reason why I was still confident after the first half was because the Sixers' defensive intensity was much higher and Brooklyn was just hitting contested threes. And you hoped that that would stop eventually. And in the second half, it did for sure. But I thought that there was quotes after the game from Tobias and Ennis that that Brett was the angriest they've ever seen him at halftime.
Yeah, I heard it.
Which I like going for that. You know, it's the playoffs. There's a little like coach on TV, like on a TV show type to that of like I'm coaching middle schoolers or high schoolers. But like you should be able to, you know, in the privacy of your own locker room, like. Give it to your guys a little bit and get them to get their intensity up. And I think that he did that. And I'm glad that there wasn't like any hurt, damaged egos or anything. Like, this is the playoffs. You can't come out flat. You can't come out letting them take open threes. And they didn't. And man, that third quarter, 51 points. Pretty damn good.
Did you happen to hear Tony to Tony's analysis after game one?
I legitimately couldn't do anything the past couple days. I just couldn't.
So
I was mad.
Here's the comment we got from Tony to Tony after game one.
Look it, process was good. Words, very good. Okay, we got to do it one more time. Just one more, maybe two more times, but then we'll get it right. You know what I mean? Got to trade them all and then do the process one more time. All right, yeah, that's it.
So there you go. Just a second process, perhaps a third
I get
process.
It. I get that.
Yeah.
I will say, just back on the Brett thing, I thought he just coached a smart game. Like, I thought that he went to different looks. I thought the Sixers were more prepared for the zone. They crashed the offensive boards. I thought that the Sixers they should have gotten to the line a ton more times. There were a lot of pushing and shoving inside on shot attempts that wasn't called. They turned the ball over 12 times. I just thought, I thought Brett did a good job of getting his guys in the right places and focusing on what he can control. And I thought that they played a good game. Everybody seemed up and ready to go. It was, they needed to win by 40 and they basically did.
Well, and, it always seems like you coach a better game when you don't shoot 3 of 25 from three. Too,
yeah,
and I'm not saying that's definitely what it was.
No, but I mean the Nets were shooting 50% from three, and the Sixers only had one, and they were still up by a couple because they were just hammering them in the offensive glass, not turning the ball over, and playing solid defense. I was impressed. I was impressed by Mike Scott. He was getting blown by, he got blown by Kurucs one time, which was frustrating. And then they still let a couple loose balls. And I'm just going to harp on this, and this is going to be me forever. But it just seems like they're just not getting the loose balls. It just seems like it. I don't know. Maybe it's because they were working so hard to contest shots and close out and help and all that stuff. And then they sort of let their guard down on the glass and hope that Boban or Embiid will just get it. But they got to get the loose. They got to get the long rebounds. The Nets got a ton of points in the first half off of just long rebounds that fell. Kurucs one time got his own offensive rebound off of three because Redick just watched it. It kills me. It kills me how I almost couldn't even enjoy this 40-point win because I was too busy just sweating. JJ just helplessly having nothing to do with a loose ball. Even a pass that comes to him, if somebody's nearby, he's losing that ball. If someone's in the vicinity, that ball's gone. And that's just going to be something, a hill that I die on and annoy people about for the rest of the playoffs because I can't help it.
Well, speaking of loose balls, there's one guy that I wish would listen to you, or not listen to you, I guess, and go the other way. And that is, I'm back to the Embiid thing where I'm scared all the time.
Okay.
And I had felt better. And now watching him sort of run at half speed is really affecting me. And I just don't need the jumps into the crowd anymore.
Well, so there was,
to save the loose
there
balls.
Was two. There, you're talking about two plays this game.
Yeah, there were two.
One,
there was one on the side, which was definitely a leap into the
yes,
into the
that
seats.
Was bad. The yeah. second one was not. I saw it on the first on the first watch. It was that looked bad. But on the replay, it was he really controlled himself and didn't sacrifice his body on that play. And I was good. And that started I think that was the play that got somebody the clear path foul. Tobias. That was that play.
Was it?
Yeah, when he tossed the ball ahead. And then,
oh yes, you're right. You're right. You're right.
So I was glad with that. But I hear you on he's especially early in games, especially in a game when he is a game time decision. Just one possession. Let somebody else do it. Anybody else? Legitimately, anybody else? I want Boban diving headfirst into the sixth row to go get a ball, and I don't want Joel doing it. It's enough already. Watch those knees.
Speaking of Boban, it was a big day today where. I had promised that at the lottery party, the final lottery party, which is May 14th, featuring Choo Choo Madhubam and us raising a banner of us raising a banner, the final lottery party, and officially 1% odds, which is way better than we need to
get
beautiful. The number one pick.
It's,
yeah.
it's very apt for us. 1% is all we need.
It's going to be. A writer we both know said that he talked to Chuchu Madhuabom in the last 24 hours, and Chuchu is really fired up for the lottery party. So there are a few tickets left, writesrickysanchez.com. But earlier today, I'm on the internet, and I'm going, well, I did promise people that they could take a photo with a life-size cardboard cutout of Boban Marjanovic. I guess I'm going to have to figure out how to do this. So believe it or not, you can just Google that, and there's a company that does it. But the thing is, when it's 7'3", it's not cheap. So the cardboard cutout wasn't particularly cheap.
A lot of cardboard.
It will be a giant. So here's what I can't figure out. A great game by Boban tonight. Just fucking awesome.
Feathery and beautiful touch.
Yeah, okay. So that's what I want to talk about. He's standing there like, I don't know, 16 feet from the rim, I guess. And they're giving it to him for some inexplicable reason. Like the guy's going to fucking blow by him or something. I don't know what, like what the worst case scenario is to just going up and guarding Boban. Boban clearly can shoot 16 footers. Like he's got good touch. He's a good free throw shooter, all of those things. I can't understand why they leave him open and then why it's so hard for him to just decide to take it. Like, I felt like he needed to be goaded into every one of them.
The crowd really wants him to do those. And I think he wants the crowd to want him to do that.
So he's playing hard to get?
I think so, yeah. Boban plays hard to get. I mean, you don't want to come off too easy. I loved Boban's game. I really wish he could affect more shots defensively. I wish he was just, like, I don't know if it's just hard for him to move his arms quick enough. But, like, put your hand in front of the rim. Or in front of the backboard where everyone's just kind of like scooping a layup by you. I just wish that he was better at that. And I think that obviously most of his coaches have in the past. Otherwise, he would have played more minutes. But I still think he's valuable, was good on the offensive glass, moved the ball well. There was a couple in that play that in that stretch I talked about earlier after Brett called timeout in the third. They started using Boban inside to kick it out to shooters. And that really opened up the offense in a nice way. We've talked about this a million times. Like, I've always wanted them to have more action with Embiid when Embiid gets the ball in the post, and they just don't. They just like to simplify that and have him just like on an island and back his man down. Boban, they move, and there was a number of possessions where the ball had movement, and I think that was the first time in the series that you saw like, oh, this is the offense, this is how they can play with each other and all that. And there was a couple it was a drop down to Boban, they doubled him, kick out to Tobias, and then interior pass to Mike Scott, which is great. And then Jimmy found Tobias on a nice cut also. And I think the Boban's gravity really, as a planet himself, really like helps other things happen on the court. And I like when they use him for that. So, I mean, it's nice when they use dribble handoffs and it's just like, you know, spread and everybody else in the corners and have room for it. But I like when they when there's action to it and they can, and the offense can hum a little bit.
I have to... So there's a lot of like little nuggets in the history of this podcast. And there's, you know, a lot of things that the people who have been listening for a long time will know about. One of the most important things that is discussed, I think, in this podcast is a signifier, as a we made it signifier, something that we've all been waiting for, is the slapping of the hardwood. Anyone who didn't listen, this was the first year of the pod, I think, maybe. The first year of the pod, we were talking about what it was going to be like when the Sixers were good, were in the playoffs.
The process Sixers, and, not just the, any old
right.
Sixers.
Yeah, this was a long time ago. And you said something to the effect of you were setting the scene and you talked about Tony Roten slapping the hardwood in a playoff game. The next day, I bought season tickets again. I had them previously, but I wanted to buy them again after that. You said one thing and I bought season tickets. So it was always going to be Roten slapping the hardwood. And then Roten was no longer a Sixer. And then TJ became the guy that was going to slap the hardwood. Even went so far as to say that he would slap the hardwood when I asked him to slap the hardwood, and he still hasn't done it. So TJ would be perfect as Roten was perfect in the same way. And I always thought that it wouldn't be somebody that we expected. But tonight, for a brief moment, I didn't see it happen. I only saw it on Twitter. I thought that that guy was going to be J.J. Redick.
It really wasn't close. It wasn't even in the realm of it. He was. Yeah. It was when he called him for an offensive foul. He was pissed, and he slapped the ground. I'm not even saying slap the hardwood because he didn't do it. So official ruling, not the thing we're looking for.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That would have. I don't know how I would have tied that all together in my head if it had been.
That would have been tough. Redick. A solid Redick game. Aside from the loose ball stuff, I thought he was not as bad defensively as he was in game one. I think he's using his fouls pretty wisely because Joe Harris is bigger, faster, quicker, smarter than him on probably both ends. And so he's just got to use him to make sure he's not getting free for three. So I'm okay with that. Every once in a while, him just like grabbing his arm and pulling him away. But he's hit shots, didn't force too many. Like there were a couple times it felt when JJ's feeling good, you can tell like that's in, that's a bucket. Like he steps into one on a blow by or something. And he's like, oh, that's in 100%. And it's feeling like he is in that mode. And hopefully that holds up.
Who else?
We didn't really talk too much about Embiid. We just talked about you being scared of him.
Yeah. We will talk about Embiid right after we talk about our other sponsor for this pod. That is the Paul Green Rock Academy. We have closed entries to the latest contest to get into the Paul Green Rock Academy adult band camp, which starts April 29th. So you can't win your way in, but you can definitely sign up for it. It's $500. If you mention Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, he'll take off 20%, make it $400. You get 8 practices, and then you play 2 shows, June 22nd, 23rd. It is 1 practice a week. Everyone who has done it who has talked to me about it has said it was just like the opportunity of a lifetime. Playing an instrument is fun, but playing in a band is really special. This is Paul Green, the Paul Green, School of Rock Paul Green, sold School of Rock, came back to Philly, and started the Paul Green Rock Academy. So, of course, Paul Green, famous for teaching kids how to play in bands. He's got 2 programs at the Academy, a junior program, and a master's program. Master's program is what it sounds like for really, really good kids. Junior program for the kids who aren't quite there yet. I'm telling you, if your kid plays an instrument, let them play in a band. Great for personal skills, great to make friends, and great to become a great player. And who better to do it with than Paul Green? PaulGreenRock.com is where you go to find out more about the junior program, the master's program, or the adult program. PaulGreenRock.com. Once again, that is PaulGreenRock.com. Embiid. So, once again, questionable game time decision. Saw him warming up. Cousin Alec and I were watching from afar and saying how it didn't look like he had a brace on, and it didn't look like he had a brace on. He, like physically, in terms of how he jumps and how he runs, like you can tell how limited he is.
Yeah, no lift whatsoever.
But that makes the first 8 minutes of that third quarter, I think, like all the more impressive.
Yeah.
As impressive as Ben was in the first half of that game, Embiid... Like, because they played pretty well in that first half, and they were up 1, and everyone had like that oh no feeling in the pit of their stomach, and he just came out and just fucked the Nets up for like the better part of the third quarter, and like helped them end the game. It was incredible.
51 points is just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Imagine a Doug Collins team scoring 51 points in a half. That'd be crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Joe didn't have any shot attempts in the first quarter. It went to the line, I think, 2 or 3 times, and they were definitely being cautious about his minutes. And I'm glad he only played 21 minutes. I love that he didn't. When he came out for the fourth quarter, I was like, "Don't do this."
I was kind of mad, actually.
Yeah,
so I was kind of mad.
They pulled him pretty early. Yeah, for sure. But got him out of there. 21 minutes is great. I mean, this should be. In this series, they should be able to beat this team, first of all, without Embiid. But if we need him, it should be like no more than like 32. And I would love it to be on the short end of that, you know? just to save him for the rest of the playoffs when we're going to need him to play like 38, 40 minutes because we're playing the best teams in the league. But yeah, I mean, he didn't take any threes. You can tell he doesn't like it. He doesn't want to do it. I wish he would. I still want him firing, but I think at this point, sort of similar to Ben, he's not going to be confident in that shot the rest of the way. So there might be games when he takes a couple, but it's not going to be as much as we want. I mean, I want him like Brook Lopez level shooting threes. Like I want him to take eight a game, and when he's not, to save it up and have that like 10 feet and in game, like just save your energy for that sort of pounding that you're going to get in there. But tonight he was great. I mean, picked his spots. The ball was never a black hole with him. And I think that sometimes even when he's on, he has tendency to have those possessions where he just sort of like holds the ball for a while and doesn't look around. Didn't turn the ball over much. Just sort of like when he was going to go, he went, and that was, effective because they just can't stop him. The, flagrant foul. Holy shit. Like, what an elbow, first of all. Great elbow.
Yeah.
Right in Jared Allen's fucking grill.
They were going to review it, and I'm like, hey, guys, I'm 100 feet away. And that was definitely a flagrant foul.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. There are some people on Twitter, Jared Dubin, who I like, said it might have been a flagrant two, and then I looked up some Nets fans, and they were all complaining that he wasn't ejected for that. And it's like, oh, go fuck yourselves. Like, for real. Like, absolutely. High elbow. Flagrant one, but he didn't like punch somebody in the back of the head. Like, that's just not a flagrant. If he came in like high elbow, like The Rock, then sure. Like, but he's dribbling a ball. He's doing a spin move, trying to get to the rim. Like, that's not a flagrant two. Bobby Marks, fucking Woj's boy, going, if that's not a flagrant two, I don't know what is. Well, it's punching someone in the face with a hand when the ball's not. When the game's not in play or whatever, like you don't just, it's a high elbow. Absolutely. Flagrant foul. Sure. But like, you're going to kick a guy out. It doesn't matter if it's Embiid or if it's like Matt fucking Geiger. You don't kick a guy out of a playoff game for that. It's a flagrant one. That's enough.
He's probably related somehow to Sean Marks. Maybe that's his problem.
I think Sean Marks is from New Zealand.
Yeah, he is. But that doesn't mean that he can't be related to him.
Bobby Marks seems like the least cultural person in history. He was just like, he just grew out of a salary cap sheet.
Yeah, fuck him. Fuck Bobby Marks. He's banned from the ring. He's banned. This is a good performance. Can you believe? So Gons asked me to come on Heat Check. And at the end, he gave me an opportunity to call out Simmons or he'd be banned. And they left it in the podcast.
Wow. So I didn't listen because, again, I just couldn't consume any content between game one and now. But fine. So tell me how it went.
You hear me enough.
I do.
You know?
I do.
It was the same. We said before it, we were like, he was like, hey, I listened to the pod you did with Mike. Let's just do the whole thing again. And I'm like, okay. So I don't know. It was fun. That was the first time I have appeared on a Ringer podcast. Their silent ban, I guess, is now over. And so the whole time I'm thinking, and we talked for a while, the whole time I'm thinking, I have to bring up Simmons to Gons, or everyone who listens to the Ricky will think I'm a coward. I have to do it. But knowing full well that Gons could have cut it out. So at the end, he serves it up to me on a silver platter. He says, is there anyone at the Ringer who you want to unban or ban or anything like that? So I was like, well, I said, Gons, you know, we've unbanned KOC recently. We almost banned Dan Devine. I said, but I have a bigger issue with the number one at the Ringer. And I explained everything. And I said, he has until May 14th. He has 1 month to invite Mike and I either on his podcast or he comes on our podcast so we can relitigate the process because it was unfair to Sam Hinkie. And I said, if he doesn't, then he's banned again. That was on the Ringer podcast network.
What a nightmare.
I just wasted the opportunity.
No, that's good. You got to stay to your brand.
Yeah.
I have a couple of things before I'll let you go to bed.
Yeah.
How do you feel about?
I'm having fun.
Yeah, good.
I'm having fun.
After a win, always good. How do you feel
fucking
about Jimmy?
Philly's lost.
Yeah, I didn't love the game. How do you feel about Jimmy taking TJ's backup point guard minutes?
I'm fine with it for now. There will be other games where TJ plays. Mm-hmm. I think it. Jimmy Butler thinks he's the point guard. So honestly, if it gives him more reps during the game and it keeps him happy, then I'm fine with it. I just think that if he shouldn't overreact to shortening things up, I guess. And
you're talking about Brett?
Jimmy Butler's not 24. He's not Simmons. And I know they got to play a lot of minutes during the playoffs, but he has an injury history. He's getting a little older. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say, and I guess it's hard to judge how many minutes Butler played tonight because they all sat for that last part. But, you know, if you could steal 6 or 8 TJ minutes in there, I don't think it would kill him. I guess is all.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I would love those TJ minutes to be with Tobias and Embiid. I'd rather not be with Simmons if that's going to be the case. But yeah, I like Jimmy's game tonight. He obviously didn't, you know, put up as much on the stat sheet as he did in the first game. But I thought he also picked his spots, moved the ball well, 7 assists, no turnovers. I thought he attacked the offensive glass well and didn't get a bunch of calls. But he was in there battling. I thought he played well defensively. Like the difference between Brooklyn's guards getting to the rim in this game versus game one is stark. And they really did. It was force them to hit contested threes. And in the first half they did. And then they kind of stopped. And I think a lot of that is Jimmy. I will absolutely once again give credit to JJ for his defense on Joe Harris in this game. And I thought it was just like it's just a calming presence. Jimmy stepped into a couple shots. It was nice. There was a three that rattled out that I'm happy with him taking. Like, please keep taking more threes. But yeah, I think I agree with you in that there will be spots for TJ eventually. But in this series, when you just need guys who can control tempo and also defend their position and not get just beat on every possession. It's tough to find a spot for TJ right now, unless you want to like bother D'Angelo Russell a different way. But for tonight, yeah. I was happy with it being Jimmy and Ben. And this is why it's good to have this many great players. Like, this is how every game should look. Every game, one game it's Jimmy just dominating and putting up 35 or whatever, and then the other game he's like, all right, I'm just going to distribute. I'm going to find Ben. I'm going to find Embiid. I'm going to find Tobias. A couple more shooters. Mike Scott had a nice game. I love that Ben Simmons tip to Scott for the end of the third quarter, I think it was.
I just want to talk about Butler for one more second.
Yeah.
I was on with Angelo on Monday morning, and they were asking about, you know, how Butler played in game one, and he obviously played well. But I said one of the things I think about Butler is, sure, he scored 36 points, and he looked good doing it, but I don't know if Jimmy Butler being the best scorer on the team is a championship team. Mm-hmm. And as well as he played in game one, it was more out of necessity than it was, this is our best option.
I agree with that.
And, you know, I would obviously like him to score more than 7 points. I think he's better than that. But he did what was like necessary, made a few good passes, and I thought the backup point guard stuff was fine. If he was like, if I was more sure that he was more fine with that, with having 7-point nights and just being totally uninvolved, I would have a different view on him. I think part of the view I have on him is that part of him would rather be game one Jimmy, even if it meant less of a chance of winning.
I'm back on good teammate wrong, Jimmy, man. But he after the game, he's like, a loss is a loss. I'm more upset that I got no assist. I got to get my teammates involved more. And here he comes out, game two, and just 7 assists, no turnovers. 10 shots. The whole starting lineup took between 10 and 12 shots. Boban led the shot attempts with 14. Like, this is the kind of Doug Collins bullshit balanced offense that we've been asking for how fucking long? No, I'm happy with it. I do think, look, Jimmy, well, he wants one thing, and it's to win, and he'll tell you about it over and over again. And I think this, now that we're in the playoffs, this is the example of that. And I think that, like, look, the best case scenario for this team is to get off to, I mean, the playbook is: get off to a hot start with the lineup, because the starting lineup is better than yours, and then slowly let them back in it, and then and then over the course of the game, Jimmy finally deciding, or whoever's got the best matchup. Sometimes it's going to be Ben if they don't have a guy that can defend Ben. Sometimes it's going to be Embiid if Jared Allen's on him, or sometimes it's going to be Jimmy just like doing fourth quarter stuff, and then having that close the game out. And so hopefully we find more of these 40-point wins, but if it has to be a more balanced punch-for-punch attack, that's how it's going to happen. And so that's why you have this many elite scoring options on this court.
What else do you have on your list? Anything?
How concerned are you that this was without Jared Dudley? And Jared Dudley played a very good game one where he stopped pretty much anybody, including Ben, sometimes Jimmy, sometimes Tobias.
Well, as I said before the game, any injury that makes the Nets have like one less guy seems like it would help us, because they just seem like they have more playable players than we do. I don't know. I'll take what I can get, I guess. If Jared Dudley is a difference between the Sixers beating the Nets and not beating the Nets, then we truly fucked up somewhere along the way.
Yeah, so, I agree with that.
Nice player. Wish we had him, but it shouldn't be the difference between the Sixers winning and losing a series.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were a lot of those kinds of players in the Heat last year, you know? Those kinds of, like, 6'6 to 6'8, like, physical, wily types that sort of just, like, nowhere to be, and I think eventually Ben figured them out, and hopefully that's the case with Dudley also.
Anything else?
Who do you? We're two games into our third series process playoffs. Who do you hate so far on the Nets? Who have you grown to hate?
I don't. That's a really good question. I just hate D'Angelo Russell, but I already hated him. Mm-hmm. He just has such a fucking like douchey way and face, and he's not nearly as good as he thinks he is. And I don't even know if I'd like him. I don't know if he's one of those guys that I would like if he was on my team.
No, I don't
really
so.
Have a problem liking them. I don't like him at all. And Dudley does seem to talk a lot.
Yeah.
In general. I really like Davis and like Jared Allen. Yeah. Yeah.
I've obviously loved Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie for a long time. I get frustrated watching them score on my Sixers, so that's tough. But I've decided I really hate Rodion Skurucs, like, a lot. And I have just like the total animosity for him. I like Joe Harris. I feel nothing for Damari Carroll. Jared Allen I like, although when Embiid elbowed him in the mouth, I did emote a very like raucous dinosaur roar. So I would like more of that, please. They're a likable team. Like, this is why, like, there's a companionship to them. And I it's frustrating when on your home court in game one, when you're supposed to blow them out, that they're like all having a good time on the bench, standing up, applauding each other and doing celebrations. And it's just like, no, this team should be like bullied into submission. They should be like it needs to be like an NCAA tournament, like, you know, 15-2 game, and we need to just like put them out of their misery the rest of the way.
Yeah, they do not, as we said in the preview, and even I said today, like the Nets just don't have enough really good players to beat the Sixers. If they beat the Sixers in a series, there needs to be a lot of like accounting taken of who the Sixers are and who they think they should be. And that's even with a realistic thing where, you know, I don't think Simmons and Embiid are like championship ready guys yet. I don't think in their evolution they're there yet. But that said, you can't lose the first round series to the Nets.
Yeah, just can't do it. Sixers in five.
One last thing, and I know we didn't talk about it, but like on the I talked back and forth with AU before he wrote that thing about the booing. Like that he doesn't think it's productive and all that kind of shit. Like, I really think we all got to chill out a little bit. And like, you're allowed to boo at sports. It is like the most innocuous, like harmless way to jeer a player. Like, there are so many awful things we hear about, racist and cursing and talking about family. Like, if people can't go to a playoff game and boo when the home team does bad, just say boo. I don't like, just boo is all it is. We're going to ruin sports. I just think we got to chill out a little bit. It's okay that they booed. It was okay that Ben Simmons got mad. We'll all survive.
Well, the weird thing is that, like, it's the old school people that are upset about it. It's the, like, mainstream, very, like, oh, and here's a Philly crowd booing their own team. Come on, guys. It's the, well, you won 51 game. It's like the fucking, just like, get shut up your ass. Like, who gives a shit? Well, like,
I think there's two crowds.
You said the sanctimonious. You said the they're like being overly sanctimonious, which I 100% agree with. And it's just like, guys, if your team is playing bad, you're allowed to boo them. That's just the case. And that's the intensity and amount of giving a fuck that Philadelphia has. And I'm happy about it. I'm happy that Benny from here said it today. And I mean, I just don't need to hear from, like, fucking Reggie Miller or Paul Pierce or fucking Marv Albert, like, just being aghast at how a team could boo, a fan base could boo their own team. They need support in this time of need. Fuck off. Like, legitimately fuck off.
Yeah. They don't need support. They'll be fucking fine. They'll be fine. It's, everyone will be fine. Yeah. Yeah. The national writer, that was Jordan, what's Jordan's last name, that actually wrote the Hinkie article, said
it. Yeah, I don't remember.
And I was just like, I was like, fuck off, man. Like, you guy, Robert Mays said it about Eagles fans once.
Who's the guy who like, wrote the, like, the baseball writer who's like really lame, who like wrote the novels? Like Tuesdays with something.
Oh, wait, did Mitch Albom write
that? Yeah, Mitch Albom. It feels like such a fucking Mitch Albom take. That he would have, like, oh, what a, just as he, like, just, like, holds up a picture of St. Louis Cardinals fans, and we have to just, like, bow to them. Like, fuck, oh, my God, I just couldn't give less of a fuck what these fucking people think. I'm going to, like, I hope they come out at halftime and get, like, a, you know, some award or something, and so we can boo the fuck out of them.
Finally, on Twitter, Sixers VP of Communications, Dave Scholler, told me that I could record a Ricky at the Wells Fargo Center afterwards if I need to next time.
Really?
So I might take him up on that.
Wow.
Yeah, well, he responded, we need the pod now. And I was like, I got to get home first. And he was like, do it here. So I was like, well, I don't have my stuff, but next time we'll do it there. Anything else? This was good. We'll talk Thursday night, right?
Yep.
Thursday night's the next game.
There's a nice bounce back game. I mean, the shooting comes and goes, but I think they got good looks tonight. And I think they moved the ball well. And they seem to, like, give a shit about each other. Everybody's having a good time. Every game needs to be like this. I want to like come out and like pin them into submission on their home court. Like, absolutely. This nothing fan base with, like, no, like, color scheme. Like, get out of here. Lose in five.
For several years ago, we went there and chanted, we got draft picks at them as they beat us into submission. So now we will return with the draft picks and beat them. So we will talk to you Thursday night live from Brooklyn and Los Angeles, except not live at all on tape because it's a podcast. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah. You know. Lickface.
We are the murderous pair that went to jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then went to hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have powder to push, now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. True runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight. Copying of uppers and downers get done. I'm in a rush to be numb. Dropping 1,000 ain't much. Cup on the clouds on a missile to turn.